Well, good evening, people. On tonight's show, I've got David Heffernan, not Huffleham, but yeah, we had a laugh about that at the start of the show. Thanks for being on the show, David. Great story. Brilliant. And always, you're listening to me, and the show title is... Oh yeah, with me, Kurt Pixone, every Tuesday night on Radio Warwickshire, 6:30 UK time. Why not check out my Friday show, which is Country Show, 7 o'clock. It's on Mixcloud as well. Anyway, get over to RadioWarwickshire.com. If you're a band, submit your MP3s to us. Check out my website, DougieStone.com. Hook up with me on Twitter at Dougie Stone Show. Anyway, as I say, sit back, relax, grab a coffee. Oh, yeah. Over. Yeah, good evening, people. As I said, I've got David Heffernan here, not Heffalump or whatever that he's been called in the past. I had to ask him how to pronounce it just in case, because you know what I'm like. I'm absolutely useless with words I don't know. So, good evening, David. Thanks for joining us, mate.
Hi, good evening, Kirk. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm sound, buddy. It's been nice to get hold of you. I know we were supposed to be having an interview last week, but that's life, isn't it? Things change all the time. So, as you know, the show's about dyslexia, adversity and business, because I believe they're all interlinked. And, you know, I've had some great guests on, and I'm going to add you to the list of great guests, because I think you've got an amazing backstory. And I'm going to stop waffling now. So tell us a bit about yourself. Introduce yourself.
Okay, well, my name is David Heffernan. In Gaelic, actually, means I fear on, which is fear the devil, which, coming from Salford, is quite apt. I'm 43 years old. I'm husband to Emma, and I have two boys, which is Ben and Jack. I grew up in a place called Oddsall, which is in Salford, a few doors down from somebody we both know, Brad Burton. Yep. And I grew up with the backdrop of Salford Docks, just overlooking our bedroom window. So you could see the ships coming in, and it was fantastic growing up in that era. I'm very fortunate because now it's Salford Quays, which is very soulless and not very nice. From the age of 5 years old is when my story starts, really, because I went to St. Joseph's Primary School in Oddsall, which was a Catholic school. And from the age of five, I was actually an altar boy. And the priest used to come over from the church into the school, take me out of my class, go over to the church, and I'd serve funeral at the age of 5 years old. I'd serve at a funeral. I'd serve on the altar, serving a funeral.
Wow.
So at 5 years old, that was a little bit of an experience. To cut a long story short there, by the age of 20, I'd served over 5,000 funerals. Now, when you look back at my life and everything that's happened since then, it set me up to have a unique outlook when facing adversity, because I've had several death threats by Jamaican Yardies being one of them, and Salford Gangsters the other. And so I was able to deal with death quite easily, and I've come to terms with death very, very soon in life, which, you know, is not normal, again, for a five-year-old.
No, it's not at all.
By the age of eight, I remember it quite clearly, adults were coming up to me for grief counselling, which is very bizarre. And I'd just take them to the side on the pew, and I'd just listen. And the stories that I heard inside that church, the confidences that they broke, was just incredible. And to be held in such esteem as an eight-year-old, where somebody would actually come to me to be counselled, again, is not normal. Yet it was normal at the time. That's the thing.
Well, yeah, we only know normal from our experience, don't you? So you've grown up in that environment, so you, that's normal. Same as people that grow up in a single parent family, it's normal, or whatever your situation is as a child, you think that is normal. You think everyone else is the same, don't you? You think everyone else is doing the same thing.
Exactly, and you go through life and you get to 14, 15 and you start really understanding what's right and what's wrong, and we all have choices then in which direction to take ourselves in. So at the age of eight, my mother left the house My father divorced, and she left without really saying much. I remember chasing her down the road, going onto the main road, and she got on the bus and didn't even say bye-bye. And as an eight-year-old, I just felt quite alone and independent anyway, because I had two, a brother and a sister, and they had really the relationship with my dad and my mother. So I was always the independent one. I was always the one who having to fend for myself. And so, again, I threw myself into doing the altar work and just surrounded myself with good people, people who would listen. And that's one thing I've found over the years, is to be a good listener, because you can help so many people. Just, you know, we've got two ears and one mouth for a reason, you know, to listen. Moving forward, my father had us, the three kids, during the 80s, which was not normal, by the way. Again, we come round to this, not normal quite a fair bit. But during the 80s, it wasn't normal. It wasn't the norm for the dad to have the kids when a relationship broke up. It was always the mother.
No, not at all. And even still today, I think obviously it's probably more, but... you're right. Back in the 80s, definitely not a man, unless he's bereaved and his wife's died. It's not a normal thing to have seen, is it? So yeah, what is normal anyway, mate? What is normal?
I've still not answered that. I won't have a clue what normal is, because we're all different, and so therefore we're all normal. I talk a lot about prejudging. I talk a lot about basically not trying to find the story within everybody. Everybody's got a story. And one of my favourite songs, which I listen to every morning, Walk a Mile in My Shoes. And the words in that are just absolutely fantastic. And they are what I live my life by. Every single morning I listen to this song. And it's all about prejudging. Walk a Mile in My Shoes. Because until you have done, you can't prejudge, you can't abuse, you can't accuse. You know, and that's the way I try and live my life, and how I always have done. So moving forward, I say my dad looked after us from the age of eight. Now, he was unemployed at this time, because Salford Docks was coming towards the end of its life. And so there was mass unemployment. There was thousands of unskilled workers overnight. And so there was a lot of crime, a lot of drug use, a lot of regeneration going on in Salford at the time. And so my dad used to go out at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and he wouldn't come back till 6-7 o'clock at night, and he was looking for work every single day for about 4 years. Wow. Now, growing up as a kid, watching my dad coming in every night with the most stressful look on his face, desperately trying to find work, you know, had a massive impact on me. And again, it just gave me a lot of respect for what he went through.
Yeah, because a lot of people, well, the stereotypical stuff in Salford. I mean, I'm from Eccles, so not a million miles away from where you grew up, so I don't know all the things you're talking about. And it's quite easy for people to just say, do you know what, I'm just going to live off the state, and that's sort of the stereotypical Salford, isn't it? You know, some of the inner cities is the lazy, they don't want to work, but quite clearly that's not the case, and your dad must... I mean, that must have sent him insane, going out every day trying to get work and not getting anything. That's really bad for him.
Hey, looking back now, you can clearly see signs of depression. You know, at the time, it wasn't that well talked about or discussed or even open. But you could see every day that on his face, he was becoming a little bit more violent, a little bit more angry every day. And it was having a major impact on his mental state. And this leads me up to when I was about 14, 15. And you choose your options at school, and you say, right, where you want to go and what you want to do. And from a very early age, I wanted to stay in Salford and try and improve the area that I lived in. And my dad had these grand ideas of me becoming an accountant, because I was very good at maths. That was the only qualification, really, that I could say you should be an accountant for. And he worked so hard, and at the age of 16, he got me an internship at Lincoln Inns Fields in London, which is like the Las Vegas strip of accountancy. I didn't want to do it. I just did not want to do it at all. I wanted to actually volunteer, and I really wanted to establish a childcare club and childcare centre in Oddsall, where I'm from.
Right.
And for about a year and a half, we used to have the most intense arguments, and it would come to blows. He would hit me, he would have me over the table, and he'd be raining blows on me. Yet I still respected him. I knew he wanted the best for me. And so there was this conflict with him being violent, with him being angry. Yet it was all coming from a place where he didn't want me to relive his life. And so as a very young adult, I stepped away from that and I understood, you know, I respected him. And so therefore, I didn't hate him. I didn't have any anger towards him. And so at the age of 16, I moved out of school, we left school. And it came to a head, and one night, it was November, about 11 o'clock at night, we'd had this other intense argument again. And enough was enough, and he said, "You're out, get out of the house." And so at the age of 16, I found myself outside in the freezing cold, in the rain, just staring into nothingness. And I knew my life at that point was going to change forever. I knew something big was around the corner, but I didn't know what. And so that first night, I actually slept inside a brick bin shed. And I remember it. I can feel the emotions now, and I can feel the spiders and the ants and everything else crawling all over me. And I can hear the noises, the people being kicked out of the pubs and the Coke can being kicked. I can feel and hear everything. And that night, I didn't sleep. I was freezing cold. And yet something inside of me stirred. I was being thrown out for a reason. And I really needed to make sure that I built or established this childcare club, because then it would have been for nothing.
Yeah, because you was in that situation because of the dream that you had, which was against your dad's dreams. And I could understand why he wanted you to do that. But anyway, carry on.
And so for about a year, I was going around to new businesses that were being built in Salford Quays. I was going to the council. I was going to businesses in Manchester, basically asking them for funding to build this childcare club, to sort this childcare club out. And I've counted them up. I must have had over 3,000 no's during that year. And during this time, I was living above drug dealer squats. I was living in bin chute areas of disused masonettes. I was living on park benches. I even registered my bin chute area with the Salford Council as my address. Again, it was just keeping my mind active, keeping me, my juices flowing. And no word of a lie, just to digress one little bit, I was laying my sleeping bag in this little 4x4. It wasn't even a square. And I was laying my sleeping bag, and I got a knock on the door, and the postman came through the door. I said, "Are you David Heffernan?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I can't believe this, but it looks like you've got a poll tax bill." And he had this brown envelope. I opened it.
For a bin?
For a bin chute area of the disused masonette.
Right, and okay.
So I opened it. I remember it to the day. It was £428.27. And so the first thing I did is I got myself ready, rolled up my sleeping bag, and went over to Salford Council offices. And I knocked on the window and said, "Look," I said, "can I have a word? I've just received this poll tax bill for this bin chute area. How do I pay it?" And they said, "What do you mean, how do you pay it?" I said, "Well, I've just been given this bill. You know, it needs paying. Can I set up a payment plan?" And even the clerk said, "You don't have to pay this, surely." And I said, "No." I said, "I've been given this bill, so therefore it's only right and fair that I pay my way." And at the time, I had a job in a nursing home for 2 days a week. And they knew my situation, so they used to let me sleep during the night. It was a night shift.
That's nice.
But my only downside was if any of the residents died, I had to clean the bodies ready for the undertaker to come and pick them up. Which was nice, because unfortunately quite a few people died during my shifts, which I'm not Dr. Shipman, honest, I'm just unlucky. And so this one night I was cleaning this body, 2 o'clock in the morning, and all of a sudden I was stood at the side of this body and it sat up, and I looked at this woman's face and I just pushed her down and went screaming out, and apparently it's all the gas has been released, and which wasn't good. So back to the Salford Council, we set up this payment plan and I paid it off within the year. And every time I used to go in and pay my money, the clerk used to say, I cannot believe this. But again, that was normal to me. If somebody, you know, if you registered your address and you accept the responsibility that comes with that, you know, that was, again, normal for me. And so after about a year, again, all these no's, he eventually got a few yeses. And we got to the point where I actually set up this childcare club. And the main point with that was, within Salford, there was a lot of crime families, a lot of bad role models, uncles and extended family. And so I wanted, just for a couple of hours a day, I wanted these kids to escape that, so they can get on with the homework, they can be surrounded by good role models, and actually see there is a choice. And, and I know it was very hard to have that choice when you're right in the middle of it all, but at least planting the seeds that there is a future for them if they want it. You know, that was all-encompassing for me. That is what I wanted to achieve. And so we managed to get this set up, and I invited Salford Council to the opening of it. And this is the only regret I've ever had in my life, is I stood in front of the media, Salford Media, and Manchester Media, and I tore strips out of Salford Council saying how they didn't support me in any way, shape or form. They didn't put any funding into it. But I'm a bigger man. I want to hand over the keys to solve the council so they can look after it, because I took it as far as I can. I just wanted to prove that it could be done. And, you know, these kids have now got a chance. Unfortunately, the council took it over and it lasted just short of 2 months. They didn't put any effort into it whatsoever. So, again, that was a good lesson learned by me. Follow it through, you know.
You've not got the same passion as you have, and even you can understand why you wanted to hand it over, but you just, if you'd have carried on with it, then you'd have probably, you know, made, anyway, you're probably going to tell me that's what you did, but yeah, it's a good learning point, isn't it?
Exactly. And so I'm conscious of the time, and this is why I'm trying to get as much in. Move off forward about a year, and I was living in a homeless hostel, and you may well know it, on Salford Precinct. There's 3 blocks of flats, and one of them was Walter Greenwood Court. Now, at the time, in about 92, there was a homeless hostel within Walter Greenwood Court. And so I shared a flat at the time with a low-level drug dealer, a thief, and an armed robber. You know, beautiful, you know, it was an emotional time. I thought to myself, I've got to cut my cloth accordingly. This is my life as it is. You know, I can either shy away and hide myself in a bedroom and be fearful of these guys, or I could actually get to know them. And so I got to know them on a personal level. I got to understand why they're in the situation they're in. I was asking questions. They used to call me Straight Head. That was their name for me, Straight Head. And not once would they offer me drugs. Not once would they say, come and do some thieving with me or anything like that. They respected me as I respected them.
That's nice.
And it is nice. And, you know, moving forward, it proves how much of a good decision it was to do that. Because a couple of months later, I was back at my dad's house whilst waiting for an eye operation at Bolton. And I get a knock on the door at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it was Salford CID. And I stood on top of the landing and I heard the words, "Is David Heffernan here, Salford CID?" And I didn't have a clue what the hell was going on, to be honest. I really didn't have a clue what was going on. Anyway, I went downstairs, and all I kept on thinking is, I'm going to get beaten up by my daddy. You know, I wasn't thinking about being arrested or anything like that. I was going to be beaten up by my dad.
Brought crap to me door, so what sorts of it?
And so they said, look, we're arresting you for arson. You don't have to say anything unless you wish to do so. Anything you do say, maybe taking down evidence. And my whole life just flashed in front of me. At that point, I thought, that is my life over. Because nobody comes back from arson. It's 7.5 years straight. You know, and I couldn't understand how I'd been charged with arson. And so my dad pulled me to the side and he turned around to me and said, Dave, he said, all I'm going to ask you is, did you do it? And I turned around to him and said, Dad, I said, you threw me out because I wanted to be a volunteer. You know, why would I even go down the route of burning buildings down when the root cause of you throwing me out was because I was a nice guy? You know, so yeah. he turned around to me and said, right, okay, I'll support you. Now, after all the previous years, you know, the chaos and, you know, the anger and the homelessness, to hear that, you know, is just justification that I've done the right thing. So that gave me the strength then to really meet this head on. And so for about 4 months, I was answering bail, going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And on the last time, the fourth time, Salford CID turned around to me and said, you're cleared, you can go. I said, well, I need a little bit more than that. He said, you just, you know, made my life hell. What, you know, what's happened? He said, well, somebody's been, you know, charged with it. Somebody's owned up to it. Now, what had happened was, I was working. I lasted 2 days in a telemarketing place just across the road from Walter Greenwood Court. And I hated it with a passion. I'm not one of these. I say, be the best you can be. If you hate something, just get out. You know what I mean? Don't do it. And so it was before the old auto dial-up. So I used to just dial any number and pretend to talk because, you know, that was how I dealt with it. And so for 2 days, I lasted 2 days. And I sacked.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went in, being a cocky 18-year-old at the time, and I stormed in and I did a sitting process. I'm cringing now thinking about it. And I turned around to the supervisor and said, I'm going to see this place go up in smoke. Meaning...
Oh, my God.
Meaning I'm going to take you to court for my 2 days' worth of pay, which is laughable now because you'd never get your 2 days' worth of pay in court. But because of the people I was mixing with, when I was relaying this story to them, when I got back and I was angry and I was screaming, effing and blinding, these people had took it upon themselves to actually take it literally and go and burn the place down.
Oh, my God. So you're straight head and they go, well, actually, it's our bag. We'll go and do it for him. He's a nice guy. What he needs our help. So not nice, but in some respects, a nice gesture. You know, it's a totally wrong thing, but the gesture was probably heartfelt, wasn't it?
I think at this point in time, it's important to say I don't condone this sort of behaviour.
I don't condone it, but what I'm saying is, in their heads,
exactly.
They were doing you a favour because they didn't want you to get in trouble. They, you know, that's their life, and they're like, let's help this guy out, we like him.
Exactly, and this comes to the important part, and this is what I talk about when I do the speaking gigs, is the prejudging side. Because I took time to get to know these people as human beings, and not the scum of the earth or the low lives or whatever name people call them. When the proverbial hit the fan, they actually had my back. Now, once they found out that I'd been charged with it, they could have just let me fry. But this low-level drug dealer who actually went into the police station and he actually owned up to it, and his words to the police officer was, I could not accept somebody so straight going down for something he didn't do. And so I was cleared, and he got 6.5 years for it. You know, so again, as an 18-year-old, what a fantastic lesson to learn about prejudging, because that set me up for life then, to make sure that I treat every single person with respect. You know, if they want to treat me with disrespect, that's fine. But as long as I'm decent and nice and find the story behind why they're in that situation, then it will put me in good stead. You know, and just very quickly as well, because I'm very conscious of the time as well.
Because I want to find out what's going on. I want to find out what's going on now with you as well, but go on.
Well, just to put this whole storytelling business, you know, to the forefront of this conversation, is about 1998, I was living in Bolton in Great Lever, and I used to wake up to the smell of the licorice factory, which was disgusting. And you know when you wake up, you just get this sort of bolt in your head and you think, is this it? Is this life? You know, I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning thinking, is this it? Is this my life now? you know, licorice patch of smell outside the window, living in Bolton. Nobody should be living in Bolton. I shouldn't really say that.
Could be worse, mate. You could have been living opposite the tripe factory. I mean, that does stink. Yeah, I'd rather the licorice.
After a couple of days, it does get to you. It's not as nice. I'm off licorice for life now after that. And so I woke about 4:30 in the morning, and within the space of an hour, I was at Bolton train station. I had a suit jacket over me, shoulder, and like an overhaul bag. And I bought a one-way ticket to London. And I had this massive cheesy grin on my face, thinking I have no idea where I'm going, what I'm doing. I only had 90 quid in my pocket. So I finally get to London, and I was looking up at the board, and all I kept on seeing was Chelmsford, which is where the V Festival's held. So I went to the ticket clerk and said, "What's Chelmsford? You know, what happens there?" And he said, "Oh, it's just a commuter town. They come into the city from Chelmsford. It's only 30 minutes on the train. I love a little place." So I said, "Right, can I have a one-way ticket to Chelmsford, please?" And the guy gave me the ticket, and I got to Chelmsford train station, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, I've never been to Chelmsford. You know, what on earth's going to happen now? And so I turned right, and I came to this petrol station, and I went in, and I always felt you had to be cocky down south. I always, you know, I know a lot of people from down south now, and I know they're not cocky, so I apologise about that. Yeah. But I always felt you had to be really sort of brash and loud.
Prejudging, mate, prejudging
exactly,
there.
Exactly, yeah. And so I went in, and I went and said, "Have you got any jobs going?" And he said, "Yeah, I've got a part-time sales assistant." I said, "Right, there's my references. When can I start?" And he said, "What do you mean, when can you start? I don't even know you." So I told my story about where I've come from and what I'm all about. I said, "Check my references out. I'll go for a coffee. You know, you need somebody. Take me on." So I went back about 20 minutes later, and I said, "I can't believe I'm doing this, but yeah, you've got the job." So, "Oh, fantastic." He said, "When can I start?" I said, "Tomorrow, if you like." So he said, "Have you got any money on you? He said, have you got anywhere to stay?" I said, "No." I said, "I just got in now." I said, "No, you know, I've only got about 80 quid in my pocket." I said, "Right, okay, just wait 1 second. He went to the safe, got £400 out, and said, "Get yourself a bed and breakfast for a week, and we'll start taking out your wages when you start getting paid."
Wow.
So I said, "Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. That's fantastic." Now, again, I wasn't even thinking about bed and breakfast at all at that point. I thought, you know, I'm just having too much fun. So I phoned up a girl I used to live with, who lived in Barking. And I didn't have a clue where Barking was in relation to Chelmsford, but I knew it was down south, so I thought, that's good enough. A bit like the Americans think in England, everybody knows each other. And so I phoned her up and said, "I'm in Chelmsford, do you fancy going out for a pint?" I said, "What are you doing in Chelmsford?" So I explained to her. I said, "Oh," I said, "I know a couple of people who live in Chelmsford. Let me have a word with them, see if they've got a sofa for a couple of days." So about 10 minutes later, I get a phone call from a guy called Ian. And he was the bar manager at the time in Envy in Romford. And I said, "Oh, I believe you're a friend of Emma's. Come down for, you know, a night, and we'll have a chat about, you know, I've got a room coming spare next week." Cut a long story short, went for a VIP night out in Romford, if you can even get that. All of a sudden, he said, "Right, so I've got a room going spare. You can stay on the sofa for a week. So have you got any money?" You know, I said, "Well, I've got a couple of £100 that I've just been given by the petrol station." I said, "Tell you what," I said, "I'll give you the first month rent free, and then just start paying after that." So in the space of 4 hours of moving down to London, I got myself a job, got myself a house, and got myself £400 in my pocket.
Wow.
All because of telling a story. And again, not prejudging. They didn't prejudge me. They just accepted me on my word, and they liked me. They got to know me. They got to trust me. Within 6 months, I became manager of a retail store. And then within the space of 9 months, I became regional manager for this retail group. And I had 17 shops all down south, not one qualification to my name, and not one bit of experience to be able to do that job. So take risks, guys. You know, calculated risk, whatever, but just take risks because it will all come good.
That is absolutely wonderful. I'm sure that'll inspire a few people. So what are you currently doing now then for people so they understand we know your background? What's your current thing that you're doing?
Well, I'm working in schools now. I've just been offered several schools in the Northwest. My main mission at the moment, I've been looking into this for a long time. Because I've dealt with gangsters and death threats and various others in my life, I know how intimidating it can be. Yet the current law, you could actually get put in prison for failing to testify against these type of people. So my main mission at the moment is to try and create some sort of change in the law and to support these type of people, witness protection. The probation service and the CPS should be doing is protecting these witnesses. Yeah, all it is about instilling fear into them, saying you will go to prison if you don't testify. Yeah. So I'm creating a campaign at the moment to try and raise awareness of this and help these witnesses and have a sounding board so they've got that protection. Also working with young kids and giving them choices in life, you know, on the cusp of criminality, on the cusp of expulsion, trying to help them understand that I've been through life, and at the age of 16, you know, I had this massive decision to make where I was end up homeless, and yet I'm still a successful businessman now. And so, you know, doesn't matter where you are at the moment, it's where you're going to be in the future, as long as you get into the eye of that storm and have clarity of thought and be able to make the right choices to guide yourself through it.
I like it. Where can people get hold of you, David?
You can either give me a ring on 078-245-13120. Or you can go onto my website, which is www.daveheffernan.com.
Not a Huffalump, Heffernan.
I may well create another website just in case people get mistaken.
Yeah, a bit like the Meerkat, because they have a Meerkats and there's the actual... They have two websites, don't they? One is the Meerkats and one is for the actual insurance. But anyway, that's another thing. So
I'm on it. I wrote that down.
There's one question I want to ask after all that, and obviously I was keen to understand what happened with your relationship with your dad, because obviously your dad supported you when you'd said to him, listen, Dad, I'm not an arsonist. And because of all the stuff that you'd done with you, he knew you were telling the truth. So what happened to your relationship with your dad?
It's fantastic. Yeah. You know, people say, have you forgiven your dad? There's nothing to forgive. You know, fortunately now, we've got understanding about mental health. I was lucky because of my upbringing, from being an altar by the age of five, from being surrounded by death and various other things like that, and having the right people around me, I could see that he was struggling. And so therefore, how can I judge him when he just didn't have the ability to make the right choices at the time because of potential mental health issues? And so, you know, when you're unemployed for 4 years and you're going out every single day of the week trying to find work, I would rather see that as a positive role model rather than focus on the negatives where the mental health side of things.
I totally get that. I was just interested to ask you the question, that's all. And I think other people, if it's in my head, it'll be in listeners' heads as well, I presume.
We've got a great relationship now where I can go months and months and months and not speak to him. And then I just make a phone call and we just leave where we left off, you know, start where we left off. Mm. And I love that. I love that independence.
That's great. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up, David, unfortunately, because the time just zoom past us again. It always does every week, and I always have this problem, but there you go. But it's been wonderful for you to join me. Thanks for sharing that story with me, and hopefully it's helped someone out there. And I'm very impressed with your character and what you're about and what you stand for, which is... It's put you in a good stead for your life. So well done, mate. Thank you.
Thank you. It's just a shame I didn't get into it where I forced the armed robber to purchase a packet of peanuts. Another time, maybe.
All right, mate. Lovely.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what a great show. Thanks, David. Thanks for being on the show. Great guest. Another great guest. Check me out every Tuesday night here at Radio Warwickshire. If you're listening on iTunes, please subscribe. Please give me some feedback. Go over to radiowarwickshire.com about more of the shows. Some great shows on at the moment. I've got a Friday night show. It's all country. But as always, you've been listening to me, Kurt Pickstone, on... Oh, yeah. Yeah, just nip up to my website, dougiestone.com, radiowarwickshire.com, if you want to interact with the radio host on here and find out what's going on the station. As always, people, have a great week. Hope you're all right. See ya! The Dougie Stone Show.